Are you a next generation leader? Today I have Dan Freeling with me, who's been in leadership development for over 9 years, and he's a certified coach, and he'll tell us about the challenges of millennial leaders, how to get into a leadership role as a millennial, and how to thrive in a leadership role as a millennial. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
It's great to have you here. Please tell us a little bit about how you get into this.
Yeah, so I came up through leadership development, really. So I was working for a number of leadership development contracts, primarily with the U.S. federal government. So doing things like training, learning workshops, organizational development, and coaching through those, and was seeing more and more that coaching was a particularly engaging leadership development intervention, and tried to learn as much as I could about that. So I went and got my MBA, I got a master's in organizational leadership and learning, got my coaching training, started coaching clients on the side, and then recently went full-time into my own business, Contempus Leadership. So doing coaching primarily, as you said, with a millennial leader demographic, and then also doing organizational consulting, things like organizational development, leadership development, training, learning, all of that kind of stuff.
All right. So before we dive in, let's just clarify to our audience, who are millennials?
Yeah, so there's a lot of definitions out there, and I'm less concerned with the exact what year breakdown is. I was talking to someone yesterday who was born in 1980, and they're, am I Gen X or am I a millennial? And the basic idea is that it's pretty much anyone who's now in their late 20s to early 40s. So that kind of age range, it's generally defined as 1981 to 1995 for your birth year. Again, it less important to that for that exact reason for me, and more of kind of the zeitgeist of how we were brought up and where we are now career-wise. Basically, we're coming out of early career and we're squarely in mid-career now, and we're making up what I call the organization's leadership pipeline or leadership bench. And it's largely millennials comprising that. So think of people in their 30s, even early 40s. And that's really the sort of next generation of senior leaders and executives that are currently being developed right now in organizations.
So how many millennials are there in the US workforce right now?
Yeah, so it's about, the last I checked, it was 35% of the U.S. workforce, and I think that number was from 2019, so I'm sure there's been updated numbers since, but at least 35% of the U.S. workforce, and growing, obviously, as the baby boomers start to retire more and more, and millennials are really in that sweet spot of organizations, just the workforce in general, but also in leadership.
And what roles do millennials typically take in the workforce?
Yeah, so I think there's this big misconception that millennial equals college student or recent college grad. And I think people haven't updated that worldview over the past 10 years or so. It's millennials are now really, they're 30-somethings primarily, and they have 8, 10, 12, 15, a significant amount of experience force. And they're really starting to come into these mid-career roles. So a lot of my clients are senior specialists, senior managers, directors, vice presidents, even some executives, but it's really in that kind of mid-career rising leader area and less of that early career first job out of college area as well. So it's an interesting spot for leadership development and for thinking about how are you engaging millennials as an organization and how are you supporting them in their own growth as leaders as they help you to take on these challenges.
So you mentioned leaders, and we've been throwing around the word leadership quite a bit. Who is a leader?
Yeah, so I define leadership, and there's so many definitions out there, but I define leadership as enabling people to achieve a common purpose. So this idea that your role as a leader is not to be necessarily the top of the hierarchy and to tell other people what to do all the time. There can be moments when that's necessary. But your real role as a leader is to work with others to develop a collective vision, to bring folks along with that vision and to enable them to thrive and succeed and bring their fullest contribution toward that. And I think anytime you're doing that, you're in a leadership role, regardless of title.
So are you saying the role of a director is dead and it's been replaced by the leaders?
So I try to not denigrate the role of a manager, right? There's still management tasks that are, I think, more and more as we shift out of this sort of industrial era workforce that is based on having all the answers already and making sure that others do tasks and activities that you already know they should be doing to minimize the variance in what their output is and to meet those already defined targets. I think we're moving much more into this knowledge economy, this innovation economy now, where we don't necessarily know what organizations are supposed to be doing. Think of like OpenAI, for example. I think you've had a lot of tech companies that thought they knew what the future of technology was going to be, and then they were very surprised with how quickly this advanced. And I think more and more we're seeing that, where the role of a director even is not necessarily just the management role, although there's always that management component to it, but it's really, what are we looking toward in the future? How are we preparing our people to be ready for that? How are we shifting and adapting and bringing people along toward that? So I think even in roles that might have traditionally been more management heavy, there's still management, and there's also this real leadership component to it.
So what methodologies do millennial leaders apply to bring the young entry-level and trainee-level workforce up to speed if they are not being directed?
Yeah, so there's all kinds of more modern leadership frameworks. I think one of the most researched ones is called full-range leadership. So it's basically this idea of moving beyond just transactional leadership. So this idea that you, as the manager, as the leader, quote unquote, would say, okay, these are my targets and I need you to meet them. And then I'll give you a paycheck because you met them, and I'll give you a bonus because you met them or exceeded them. And I think there's times where that's helpful, right? And everyone wants to get their paycheck and wants to get paid, and organizations have targets. And obviously that's not going away anytime soon. But then there's these higher levels of what's called transformational leadership, where it goes beyond just that exchange of value in the immediate sense. And it becomes, how am I growing the trainees, the new hires, as you mentioned, as people? How am I caring about them as a human, as a professional? How am I helping them advance their career? How am I helping them learn new things in this role? And working really in partnership with them. So I think the more you can be in that space, in that transformational space with folks, it actually drives better organizational results. And that can be counterintuitive to people who are so focused on just squeezing out the most they can from people. That's there. And then another big framework that I've done a lot of research into is complexity leadership. So this one's really fascinating. This is more cutting edge, and honestly, has been less proven out in the academic research, but it's still being worked on. And there's definitely more on the edge. And it's the idea of how does innovation happen in a complex, interconnected ecosystem like we're in now, in an innovation economy? And there's this way of thinking about it that there's people in the frontier, the kind of entrepreneurial folks who might be hearing and be involved in the latest and greatest ideas in a field. There's the folks in the middle who are called enabling leaders, and their job is to be in touch with these people who are really on the fringes of the field and pushing this cutting edge knowledge and bring that into the organization. And then there's operational leaders whose job is to take what's been brought into the organization and make it happen and really do that management that's key to really implement this. And I think both of those frameworks combined and taking sort of the best of both of those is where I'd recommend that modern leaders really focus.
Wow, that's awesome. You seem to know a lot about all of this, and it's very interesting how these management roles are transitioning in the current times. So what would you advise to millennials who are looking to get into a leadership role?
Yeah, so I think there's this sort of almost paradoxical nature to leadership now that I'm starting to see, which is that it's simultaneously being more adaptable than ever and more personal than ever to succeed. So I think it's really tough to try to fit into these linear career paths and this leadership progression of the industrial era mindset. And there's some spaces where that's still the case, like maybe law firms or maybe very particular government organizations or something where there's like a stepped up career trajectory. But I think for the most part, and even sometimes within these organizations, there's this new way of working where you have to be really adaptable. You have to be always learning. You have to be in a continuous learning mindset and always be looking to be up on the latest and greatest and changing your direction as technology shifts, as ideas shift. And then I think where a lot of millennials in particular run into challenges with this is they get that and they understand that they have to be really adaptable. And what they're looking for is, how do I do this intentionally? How do I do something I actually care about that brings me meaning, that has purpose? And pairing that purpose drive with the adaptability, I think, is where the challenge is. And I really find coaching to be the best way to get at this. But I think even for people who are not working with a coach, that's really the question they have to be grappling with, is how do I both be adaptable and purposeful at the same time?
So with this challenge to be adaptable, what are the top three mistakes millennial leaders are making?
Great question. I don't think I've ever thought about it in the top three mistakes framing, so I will try my best here to do that.
Sure,
so
give it your best shot.
Yeah, I think I'd say the first one is holding on to these old paradigms of how they think that organizations are supposed to work. This idea that the way to get ahead is to go to the best college, to pick the safest career path, to slowly advance in that career path, and to think through what you think you want to do by the time you retire and linearly aim toward that. So I think that would be probably the top mistake I see people making, is just that unwillingness to adapt to the new reality. I think two might be that they're not really figuring out what they want to do, what they really want to do, what their purpose is, what brings them meaning, and that they're too focused on that adaptability aspect of it. So I think that's key too, of what do you really want, not what is this kind of portfolio of activities that I can put together that I think will make me more money or I think will lead to a career that I want. It's getting at that heart of the matter of what I really want. And then I think three is taking on the hard part of leadership and saying, I'm actually in a position now where I can lead and I can be part of moving causes I care about forward, moving organizations I care about forward, and sitting into that leadership responsibility more. And I think especially as we really sit squarely in mid-career, it's a lot more of that, of now that I'm in a position where I can have a seat at the table, what do I do with that?
Thank you for sharing that. You touched on a couple of very interesting ideas there. And the first one, let's start from the end, actually. So when there is a cause you deeply care about and you get deeply involved in this leadership role now, how can you balance your personal and your professional life?
It's such a great question. And I feel a lot of people I've worked with and a lot of just friends in general too have been dealing with this challenge. There's no easy answer to it, first of all. I wrote a book called The Career Design Map that gets at this in some ways, where it's a real question to you as a leader of how much do you want to be in a position that requires you to go above and beyond, and how much do you want to work to live and really prioritize your personal time? And I don't think there's a right answer to that. I do think that at a certain point, if you're fully dedicated to leadership, you're going to have to work a decent amount of time. And that's just, there's no way around that. It's just going to be part of that. I think that can go to an extreme that I call burnout. And I think burnout is an endemic challenge in organizations now, where people can take that too far and they can be putting the organization so far above their own needs and their own sustainability as a leader that they can be working all night, every night, and be working 12, 14 hour days. And it's just unsustainable. And counterintuitively to people who are experiencing that, it actually makes them less likely to be able to succeed over the long term and move forward a cause they care about. But again, I think there's nothing wrong with wanting to have a job that is there to pay your bills and is there to really fund your lifestyle. I think that's totally fine. But I think it's something where people have to get their heads around that that's not going to be something where you're fully leading in the way that you might want to be if you want to be in an executive leadership role.
So with the burnout, you said it's counterintuitive to work too much, because there is this hustle culture right now.
Yes.
And it's almost the more you work, the cooler you are. Why do you say it's counterintuitive?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I see the hustle culture as being the burnout portion of this. And then I see also this quiet quitting phenomenon that's happening now as being what I call disengagement. So that's too low of leadership in my mind, of this idea that it's only about me and I'm only going to work exactly as much as I absolutely need to keep this job. And I think that's also really problematic in a lot of ways. So I think that the counterintuitive part that I was saying is I think people who are in this hustle culture mentality feel like it's working. And that's why they keep doing it. And what I'm seeing is it may work for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, for 4 years. At a certain point, most people are going to burn out with that. And even for those who it feels like it's working for, I think if they actually slowed down a little bit, got more strategic, got more in terms of prioritization, that their work would actually improve, because it's not a volume game, it's an impact game. And I think that's something that people can't really click into.
It's very interesting you say that. Just last week, I did an interview about toxic leadership in startups. And this is exactly what came up, that in startups, typically, you have a very strong hustle culture. And the coach I was interviewing said the same thing. They just need to slow down. However, it's one thing to say that in a corporate environment where they have the resources to allow that. And it's another thing to say that to a funded startup who is responsible to investors and not necessarily meeting their sales quotas.
And I think that's exactly, I'm not one of these people who says that a funded startup should be working an 8-hour day. I really don't think that's the case. I think they need to be working more. And at the same time, I think they need to be strategic about where they allocate their time and how they're able to do this in a sustainable way that allows them to be bringing innovation, clarity, vision to the table rather than doing showmanship work, right? Where it's, I've heard it called performance theater, where it's, I'm sleeping at the office and I'm in a sleeping bag in a meeting room. And that's not going to bring the actual innovation that you need to move a startup to where it needs to be, more than working a 10 or 11 hour day probably, and really focusing on the high level, strategic, most important things that you need to be doing.
That's such a great advice. I fully agree with you there. So what kind of clients do you typically work with?
For my coaching clients, I tend to work with generally millennial leaders. It's not an absolute. It's just who I most get in a lot of ways. And they tend to be anywhere from a senior manager to a director to a VP level, even to like founders of their own businesses. So that's generally my client group. And then they also tend to be clustered in what I call the social impact space. So organizations that have a broader societal benefit. So whether that's government or private sector, social impact organizations or nonprofits, hospitals, schools, foundations, that kind of a thing as well.
And what's the most memorable transformation you have created with any of your clients?
There's one that I like to bring up, mostly because he's been public about it, so I can share it freely without breaking confidentiality, which is always a nice thing to be able to do. So there's been many more transformations that I would need to clear with folks first. But this one was really interesting. So it was a person who was in a vice president role, and we started off the coaching, and he wanted to succeed in that vice president role. And he said, I'll buy you a bottle of champagne if we get me succeeding in this vice president role that I just took on. And as a coach, I said, that's great if that's what you want to do, and we'll work toward that. But I'd like to take a step back and see, what do you really want to be doing? Is this the right role for that? What would success look like in this role? What is the impact you want to be making? And we did that. And it turned out that this wasn't the right organization for him. It wasn't the right fit for him. And that he was really entrepreneurial minded, and that he actually wanted to start his own company doing very similar work to what he would be doing as a vice president, but having more autonomy, being on his own time, being able to generate his own business and work in the way that he wanted to work. And over the course of our time together, he actually did that and he launched his business and it's been wildly successful. And now he's thriving as an independent business owner, doing very similar things where he was thinking that he wanted to fit into the corporate environment that he was in.
Wow, that's fantastic. And this is something you mentioned before as well, this value alignment, that people are so caught up with creating a career path in a more traditional way that they forget to ask themselves the question, what is it that they really want? So how do you bring this awareness into your conversations with these millennial leaders?
That's so spot on. And it's the real question deep into coaching is, what do I really want? And having that be at the core of your coaching is key. That's where the art and the science of coaching come into play. So it's something where people generally show up with what's called their story to the coaching conversation of, I want this goal, I want this output, and that I want to work with a coach to help me achieve that goal. What people don't see outside of the transformational coaching world is that the goal and the outcome is actually a byproduct of personal transformation. And this is shown in a number of different ways, and people have different ways of expressing this. So some people call it insight. Some people call it the who of coaching, who that person is as a person, what their values are, all of that. I'm currently working with some really interesting cutting edge coaches on looking at this through the lens of a paradigm of, what's your personal paradigm? How do you see yourself? How do you see the world? How do you see others? And the basic idea is that you work with people toward their goals, but you're always trying to get to the heart of the matter, get to who they are as a person, and get them to see what their highest potential is in that kind of a way.
Wow. Wow. That's so meaningful. That's so very powerful.
It's hard to express how powerful like real coaching is. And it's something I've experienced personally in working with my own coaches. And it really is like a life-changing process that can be tough for people to get their head around, because they do think it is this, let's set a goal together and we'll make it a smart goal, and then we'll work toward achieving that. And when they actually do this deep personal work, that achieving those goals becomes inevitable. And it's really that personal transformation that's at the crux of this.
Wow. So then if anybody wants to work with you, where can they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. So it's Dan Freeling, and people can follow me, connect with me there. My company is called Contempus Leadership. So people can go to contempusleadership.com and get in touch with me via that. So basically what I offer is what I call virtually unlimited coaching. So that's, people can either sign up as individuals, or you can sign up as an organization, or use your professional development funds or anything like that for leadership and career coaching. And then I also do speaking, advising, consulting, organizational development work, leadership development work. So folks can get in touch for that if they're looking at that for their organizations.
And if people want to learn more about your services and how you work, what was your book called again?
The book that I have out is called The Career Design Map. So that's available on Amazon, at basically,
so
you can order
it
from any bookstore. So yeah, that'd be a great place for people to start. And then there's much more background information on the website as well.
Wonderful. What's next for you then with the up and coming year? What's ahead for you?
It's an exciting time. So I'm working on a number of really interesting projects and working with a number of interesting clients. And I think it's that thinking through for me of, where do I want to take this business going forward? What kind of work do I want to be engaged in? Who do I want to be partnering with and bringing on board for this? I'm doing a lot of my own personal reflection on that currently. So definitely exciting times on that front.
Wonderful. But thank you very much for sharing all your insights and all your knowledge about next generational leaders and how they can become more meaningful and powerful leaders. If you enjoyed our conversation, please subscribe to our channel for more interviews about professional and personal development. And if you're looking for a qualified, credible coach who can help you with your professional development, please do reach out to Dan on his LinkedIn or via his website, and you can find the links below in the comments. Thank you for watching and see you next time.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike, and thank you for listening in, everyone.